Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I am your host, Dwayne Mancini. As always, if you want to get a hold of the podcast, or if you want to recommend a future guest, or just need something from us, please reach out at projectmedtechpodcast@gmail.com. My guest today is Rich Mazzulla. Rich is a senior manager in the accounting and tax group at Pease CPAs. He provides fractional CFO controller services to early stage and scaling companies. His focus is to remove the barriers most founders face from product launch to exit. Rich graduated from John Carroll University and is a certified public accountant in the state of Ohio and also has a certified exit planning advisor license. In this episode of the podcast, Rich and I discuss forecasting basics, common mistakes founders make when forecasting, setting a company up to be prepared for investors, and how Rich can help startup companies achieve all of this. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy my discussion with Rich Mazzulla.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion, talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Rich, thanks for joining me on the podcast this morning.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, I mentioned you're a senior manager at in the accounting and tax group. Is it Pease? Is that how you say it?
Yep.
Okay.
Pease CPAs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe give a brief introduction to what you're doing now. And maybe a little bit, actually start with your background first, maybe lead up to this point and then what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, you know, I started out with like most typical accountants in public accounting, right? So CPA space where you're doing audits and tax work and all that fun jazz. And what I ended up doing quickly after that, about 2 years into the career, switching over to transaction advisory. So I was flying around quite a bit doing, you know, quality of earnings for private equity firms, whether buy side, sell side, helping kind of organize these big transactions and provide some little more validity behind them. And I found myself in Oklahoma City for a couple of years. And what's great in Oklahoma City is, you know, obviously it's right next to the state capitol, and they did a lot of tax incentives for startups, specifically, you know, sales tax incentives for, you know, data centers or the technology space, trying to gather some folks over from the Bay Area and California to come into Oklahoma City. So it's a great kind of, I'll call it test bed for a lot of entrepreneurs. So I found myself doing pro bono work for a lot of startups out there. And one of the major ones was Baby Dial, little technology app for geolocation on when you call 911. But that was just for fun and really fell in love with the startup or early stage space. And so when I was traveling back to Cleveland, you know, jumped on the other side of the fence and left public accounting for a period of time, I'll call it my sabbatical. And found myself in working for a startup and doing some Series A funding rounds for them. So what I found was a lot of early stage entities don't necessarily need full-time accountants on their staff. They might need an AR, accounts receivable clerk or accounts payable clerk, or maybe a controller, but they don't need a full-time CFO or full-time director of finance. So I said, this would be a great idea for a service line for a public accounting firm to get into. Especially with a lot of med device companies out there, they might not need that type of additional burn on their P&L or you know, income statement for a long period of time. Maybe it's just an interim project, or maybe it's they need help building a projection or forecast. So I started this project and kind of grew it from there and joined Pease and launched it along with their client accounting services group. And that's kind of where we are today. So I provide fractional controller and fractional CFO work for a lot of early stage entities, along with a team over at Pease that provide that service as well.
Okay. Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, we talk about this with, especially with medtech startups a lot, right? So, you know, in a normal startup environment, you might be generating revenue really early on, right? In these med tech companies, it's difficult because they're generally not generating any kind of revenue, maybe for up to 5 years. You know, it could be longer than that. It could be shorter. It just depends. But, you know, I think 5 years is a good estimate. And burning through capital is a real issue because that is your only source of money, is raising money. And so anytime you can bring on a a person who you could turn off and on as you need it. And I think it's really important. Mm-hmm. So in my world, I focus in on regulatory, reimbursement, clinical expertise, you know, those types of things. I've talked to a few people who have fractionalized like a chief commercial officer, which is important, right? Because we know that getting to market or just getting market approval is not good enough. And so this is really interesting. And that's why I wanted to have you on, because I wanted to talk about this is, you know, it's all new to me, right? So the first time someone said, oh, you can fractionalize a chief commercial officer, I said, they don't need that yet. And then you talk to them and you say, oh, they really need that. And they need that early on to set up the organization. So let's like dive into some of these details here. I don't know a lot about, you know, obviously the accounting world, what a CFO might do there for you, what a fractionalized CFO might do. So maybe let's dive into the basics there of the kind of value you can bring for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times when we talk to early founders about their project and their idea and their product and how they're going to attack the market with, you know, whatever the fit is, right, where their value prop is, it usually stems from, I need a projection or I need a forecast, either to A, go raise money, or B, I just need to know what it would look like if I'm on the right path. So that really is helpful because, you know, I get in the conversation with them and it turns into, well, we need to develop a sales strategy. We need to develop your hiring plan. What does the budget look like for the next 3 years if this is the attack plan we're going to do into the marketplace? So it really forces a very strategic conversation. The deliverable is the projection, which is what they're asking for. But really, there's 20 to 30 hours of conversation that need to be had or thought, you know, brain cycles that need to be had before that. So it really forces that conversation. So when you talk about fractional CFO, you know, maybe we're not in there clicking buttons and applying payments and setting up new vendors, but it's more of a consultative or advisory type role that we're in. And that usually kind of blossoms into a bigger and more robust relationship where at some point, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, we're on their organizational chart as their CFO or as their controller. So, you know, at a very, very early on starting point, we start there. And then as they need more stuff, we peel on or peel off depending on what they need. So for example, you know, hey, we've raised capital. Can you manage our cap table now? Sure. Do you need a 409A valuation for that cap table? Yeah, we have somebody in the back that'll do that for you, right? So there's these little projects that pop up along the way that we can help you with. And if we don't have the resource internally, we know plenty of people in the industry that do that at a reasonable cost.
Yeah.
And outside of that too, you know, there's great resources in the area, right? Bounce Innovation Hub in Akron, Jumpstart in Cleveland, all these great groups. I can go on and on with the list, but you know, we're partnered with many of those, or we're trying to get connected with many of those to ensure that we're in the right place at the right time. So, a lot of our people will, you know, we don't necessarily need to engage with you right off the bat. We can have plenty of business conversations that, you know, pick our brain or use us as a sounding board along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you brought up a good point. That it's, you know, I don't want to gloss over too quickly, but you brought up you're on their organizational chart, right? And and that's an important piece that a lot of startups, you know, use this to your advantage, right? The when you have people who are willing to be on your staff, but be on it on a part-time basis, you can still add them to your org chart and it looks good to investors, right? So, you know, that's the beauty is like in sports, you know, Mookie Betts plays for the Dodgers. He doesn't play for the Dodgers, the Indians, and, you know, another baseball club. But in this scenario, yeah, you know, Rich can be on company A, B, and C. And that looks, you know, an investor might say, hey, you know, I've seen his name come up before. I've worked with Rich before. I really like this. And you can use that to your advantage. So you can go get top tier talent that you actually can't afford. But you can because it's part-time. I think that's really, really important. And that that should be valued when you're raising money.
Absolutely. And you know, to just echo that point, I've met with similar investors and I know what they want too, which is funny because it's okay, here's what I'm providing. And I have my simple, you know, approach to things. And a lot of the times we're asked to do investor relations or board of directors relations, right? Where we're presenting the financials or we're presenting kind of the activity. Mainly because we put it together. But founders, I think, are a lot of times, especially in the med device space, are asked to be experts in everything. They have to cover the technical side of things. They have to be the engineers. They have to be the sales rep. You know, they have to do everything. So it's nice for them to just say, I don't necessarily need to take college courses in accounting, but I got somebody here that can understand and relay that information appropriately. So yeah. That's always helpful too.
Yep. And then the one quick question before we get into like forecasting 101, mm-hmm. we'll call it. Do you only focus on a regional market or is it, you know, is it just like the Cleveland Akron area or is it the US? Is it global?
Good question. For what I do and what the team does, we can be virtual, right? Okay. So we focus our attention here in Ohio because this is where we're all born and want to see it, but, you know, Ohio become successful in the next, next technological hub, right? Or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've talked to folks in California before. I've talked to folks in Oklahoma again before. I've worked everywhere. But again, everything we do is virtual, especially in this climate. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do anything. We're not geographically locked. And in terms of industry too, just to spin that question a little bit, I like to say we're vertical agnostic, right? We are focused in many industries, but especially with the Cleveland Clinic and UH and some of the resources here in Ohio, we're definitely med device, life science, and biotech focused as well.
Yeah, that's good to know. And the reason I asked about the regional is because, you know, listeners are from all over. So, you know, it's good to know. And that's something I always preach to the companies I work with is, you know, go get the best talent. You know, whatever's going to help you fit the, it doesn't matter where they are. Med tech companies, especially startups, are so used to being virtual, even before COVID, you know. So that's good to know. So let's get into forecasting, you know, basics. They just kind of started off from there. Lead us in. Because this is new for me.
For sure. I'll kind of spin it like a normal conversation we have with these early stage founders, right? Okay, yep. I need a projection that's 3 years out. Mm-hmm. And typically the conversation goes, okay, let's talk about the product. And let's use med device as the example. I have this new widget that's going to fit this very niche market in, let's call it long-term care facilities, right? Mm-hmm. Elderly population. Okay, how are we going to do that? How are we going to roll this product out? What's the attack? You know, what's the sales strategy here, and how are you going to get the brand awareness? And typically, you know, people always say, "Well, here's how much revenue I need to hit, and here's a growth rate, and here's where we'll start, and I'll slap a percentage on it, and grows, right? The hockey stick growth." Mm-hmm. But what investors are really looking for, there's art and science a part of forecasting. And I think a lot of investors look to the forecast because, I mean, especially in the early stages, they're betting on the founder. They're not betting on the product just necessarily right off the bat, but they're betting on the founder to figure out where that product fit is and how you scale it from there. So when we talk about a forecast, what that's really doing is it's telling the story of your strategy in financial numbers. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to call it BS or made up or anything like that, but it's definitely... you know, there's going to be pivots along the way that will not, this is not going to be completely accurate is the point I'll make. And how do we start there? So I would start with three things. There's two methodologies in terms of forecasting. You can do top down or bottom up. Top down is I know what my revenue needs to hit for the first year and the second year and the third year. And then you kind of fill in the blanks from there. So if I want to hit, let's just say 1 million my fifth year, we'll call it right back to your example. Well, if you want to hit 1 million in your fifth year. What's the hiring strategy to get you there? How many sales reps? Are we even going to hire internal reps? Do you want to use outside channel partners? What are the costs associated with hiring people? What are the revenue drivers associated with that top line? And then what are the costs effectively associated with that top line? So you kind of fill in, ask these questions and you start filling in these blanks. And it takes about, I would say the first meeting takes about 3 to 4 hours. In order to kind of fill in those blanks and say, okay, now we can start putting some numbers on paper. And especially with a med device company specifically, those first 4 years of it's really associated with, we don't really care about top line. We care about bottom line and how much cash we're burning each month. And that's what your investors really care about because you're raising a limited amount of capital with no top line output.
Right.
So understanding where you're at, where you're trying to get to, especially from a regulatory, you know, if you're doing a 510K, you know, how short can you make that horizon in order to get that? Because that's where your valuation trigger is much, much higher and you can go raise more capital to get you to that fifth year. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about med device and their projections, it's really budget management or business spend management. So what's the goal? And if the goal is a 510K filing, how do we get you there and how much cost is associated with getting you there? And this is where, you know, hiring external parties versus full-time people is imperative. And understanding, you know, who could file the 510K for you. Do you have an external regulatory body like yourself to kind of manage that process or understand the nuances a part of it? And what does that cost look like? So if you raise a limited amount of funds, how do we mitigate that risk along the way?
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, you know, so the regulatory piece seems like, you know, that probably fits in, you know, to how much it's going to cost. What about when you're forecasting, and I don't know if you're going to get to it or not, if you are, well, wait, but reimbursement, you know, does that play a big factor into how you do your forecasting as well at the early stage, or is that something that comes a little bit later?
It does. I mean, there is a level of grant, I'll call it grant, non-dilutive grants is what we're looking for, right? And what that type of reimbursement from the grant side of things is. And then it, depending on where the product is and what type of reimbursement it's looking for Medicare, Medicaid, especially with the rule changes right now, that's a different strategy later on, especially with that's kind of in flux right now. So I don't have a definitive answer on where, you know, you probably need a definitive product of where the fit is before you can tell what the reimbursement is. I will tell you reimbursement rates are going down. So in terms of that, you're not going to see as much top line along the way. But when we talk about grants specifically, that's kind of the golden goose, especially in these early stages. Can you find a grant that really fits the mold of what you're trying to do? And how does that stretch your dollar even further? So investors really like to see, here's our pipeline of grants that we're going to go after. Here's our probability of success, and here's how much cash will be coming from that. And that, again, mitigates that burn rate, which stretches your dollars even longer to get you that 510K filing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, when I had asked you before to, so we had a skeleton of what we wanted to talk about. We had forecast rabbit holes is what you wrote down. Mm-hmm. You want to explain a little bit of what you meant there?
I do. And it's funny because these conversations, you have founders that, hey, just build me a projection forecast. Here's the plan. Just put it on paper. Okay. Got it. We can do that. And then there's other founders that are like, this is great. I really love this. I'm really getting into the weeds on this. And I want to turn this forecast that's meant for external parties to kind of echo our plan into an operational plan. And I try and make a clear distinction between the two because there is a level of, I guess, you want to portray optimistic attitudes when you go out and raise capital. But in reality, that's not always reality, right? So let's put some conservative numbers in place on an operational plan versus being overzealous on our investor plan, right? Or if we're trying to go raise money. And I think, not to say that we're trying to deceive or anything like that, it's not the case at all. What we're trying to do is echo, here's the strategy and here's the best case scenario, but then operationally, let's plan for the worst. You know, hope for the best, plan for the worst. And so when you talk about an operational plan, you really start getting into the weeds. So for example, if you're going to sell your med device online in an e-commerce platform, let's just hypothetically say that's the case, and you start developing KPIs or key performance indicators for marketing strategies. So a ROAS is a typical one, or return on ad spend. So you're advertising the product out there, you're trying to get it into consumers' hands, you're not going through hospital systems or anything like that. And that metric is very important. So when they start driving into that metric, you can put a list of 100 KPIs down, and that could feed your revenue drivers. And you put all these levers in, you start pulling all these levers, and that kind of populates this projection. And if you get too much into the weeds, it becomes a rabbit hole. So you can go deep into these projections and being granular as you want, but it really doesn't provide value if nobody else understands it or it's not user friendly. So you got to kind of, there's a balance between level of granularity and I'll call it usefulness that is really indicative of what you're trying to do. So perfect example of this is we had a client that I developed a very robust plan. We had a very detailed projection lever tab where they could tweak everything they wanted to all the way down to different product SKUs. And when we got to the revenue numbers, they said, this is way too complicated. I want nothing to do with this. So I had to scale it back and say, okay, what are the targets we're just trying to hit? And they simply put, they wanted to grow at a rate of, you know, 6% month over month. Okay, that's fine. How are we going to do that? And then the rest of the projection fed that answer or fed that question. So you don't have to be super granular, but you know, there needs to be a thought process behind what you're doing so you can articulate that to whoever's looking at it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So you talked about the three big areas, sales strategy, your hiring plan, your budget. You know, let's talk about some common mistakes you see, with startups, when they're forecasting.
Yeah. Common mistakes I see are, a lack of, I'll call it business fundamentals. So when you hire somebody, People always say, okay, well, here's their salary and that's it. That's a very common mistake. You know, I just have a salary here. Take into account payroll taxes, take into account benefits. When are you going to launch a 401k plan? What's that match look like, if any? What are the health plans going to look like? You have to think about all these costs. But not only that, okay, I just hired somebody, which means I got to buy them a laptop. And I got to buy software licenses for that laptop. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a wage increase in a year. What does that do to our budget? So all of these things kind of, you need to think through when you hire somebody, the ramifications of that. So when I talk to our founders, we talk about put yourself in an employee's shoes and what do you expect in a year from this company? What do you expect to receive on day one? And then backtrack into, okay, what's the cost associated with that? So luckily we've planned all that out for you. So when we see a projection, we're like, okay, you got to add X, Y, and Z in here. But that's a very common mistake. Another common mistake is revenue. They haven't thought through a revenue driver or what even a revenue driver is. They've just slapped a growth rate on top of whatever number they've been selling. So how do we think through that process? What distribution channels are we going to go to? For instance, MedDevice, if we're going to go through distribution channels, what are the distributors in what regions? Where do we want to target first? If you're in Ohio, maybe it's a 5 to 8 hour drive. It's outside of the region just so you can get back it there and back in a day. So as the brand becomes aware and people are aware of your product, how do you start expanding that regionally and where are you going to target next? Mm-hmm. And how big is that space in those new regions that we're expanding to in phase two and phase three and phase four? So you just thinking through this, and it's almost educating the founder to a point where they can go back into their investor meetings or board meetings and they're more well-versed in this topic because now they could articulate it a little better because they thought through it and had a brainstorming session to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's helpful. You know, one thing listening to you talk and excuse me, listening to you talk, yeah, I just had this like epiphany of, you know, sitting there and even if you don't need, maybe you're, you know, you don't need this specific service a lot right now, right? Maybe you don't need a fractionized CFO. You're not going to mm-hmm. be spending a lot of time on whatever they're in the process of doing right now, but you're still there and they could turn you on when they need you. You can almost see how valuable it would be to even have like quarterly, have this, you know, fractionalized CFO, fractionalized chief commercial officer, your mm-hmm. your clinical, your regulatory, all in one meeting to talk about big strategic ideas. Because the way you look at product development, the way I look at product development, the way a commercial person looks at product development are all different. But you can see like the value of all three or four of those people in one room, you know, talking about making decisions, mm-hmm. You know, just kind of the way you just kind of describe some things. It's just, it, you know, you just look at things differently, but in a good way, you know, they kind of balances each other out. So,
and there's a great example of this. So I was in a meeting with a CMO and myself and then the founder, and we were sitting there and our supplier or fulfillment center had just run out of boxes for their product. And it's these nice branded boxes and I don't care, right? That's a dollar a box versus a quarter a box. Let's go with the brown paper boxes in the back.
Right.
And I got the look of, you know, everyone looked at me and said, well, why would you want to do that? Well, the cost, it makes so much sense financially. Why would you, I'm going to get this product. I'm going to rip the box open. I'm going to get the product and use the product. Why would I care about what box it's in? And it wasn't until, you know, they shot the idea down and we moved on. So I was like, well, I'm going to order the product and actually see what this looks like. So I bought the product. It got delivered and I opened the box. I was like, wow, that experience of opening the box, it was very nice. And it was so brand focused that we wanted to be seen as a premium product. It made sense from a marketing standpoint. Financially, mm-hmm. it made no sense to me, but it made sense when I opened it and got the product as a consumer. The two buttons clicked in the head. So yeah. It makes sense. You need all those ideas and all those concepts to come together.
Yep. Yeah. I think that's a dangerous thing as well, is assuming that just because you don't know something that it's a bad idea. Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't question things, right? You should definitely question mm-hmm. things. But just sitting there and assuming that because you don't understand marketing, it's stupid, is a dangerous line of thought, right? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I did that with when I first started my job at NAMSA, I was in a very technical role and I was like, man, business development people, like, they are useless. And that was my opinion. And then like 2 years later, I'm in business development and I'm like, holy cow, like, they are so important. And, you know, I was mm-hmm. like, you know, and I'll be the first to admit, yeah, I was younger and I was stupid. I was like, you know, stuck in my little hole. I had my blinders on. This was my world. And if you saw it over here, it wasn't right. And that's dangerous because, you know, you quickly, it was like a 6 months into business development. I was like, boy, if we didn't have business development, we wouldn't have a company, you know? So, but that's the tendency of some people sometimes. And you got to be careful with that, especially when you're a founder. You might not necessarily be a, you might not have that CEO mindset. You have to have, you have to get that really, really fast or your company will fail.
The best founders I've seen, it's a question of being in the forest or looking, or being in the weed or in the weeds of the forest and looking at the forest as a whole. And it's the best founders I've seen that are out there are the ones that can zoom in a granular detail and understand the problem, do at its fundamentals, and then zoom right back out to see the broader picture. And it's, they're a orchestra conductor, right? They're trying to bring all these people in the room that are smart in their respective areas so, and have them zoom out and see the picture with them. And I agree, it is dangerous and it's hard not to have those opinions because you're an expert in your respective field. Mm-hmm. But seeing the whole picture and understanding the vision of where the company is going and how it's going to get there is imperative at these very early stages when you start bringing in these heavy team members.
Yeah. Yep. So forecasts, you know, are these weekly discussions, monthly discussions? Is it quarterly that you're looking at this? You know, maybe talk about the cadence that you need to have with this when you're reviewing it.
Yeah. So typically when we build these forecasts, there's a purpose. Is it an operational plan? Is it for our investors? Is it to go raise money? You know, what is the purpose of this? Whose hands is this going to be in? Is it for a bank, right? Are we going to go raise capital through debt instruments? You know, these are all valid questions to figure out, okay, who's the audience of this? And it's not like the plan is that different, but, you know, let's just say if it's for investors and we're raising capital and we're a self-perpetuating business with cash flow, I'm not going to show all the wish list to build this lab or a clean room, right? That's $1 million and go build this project over here and show that we're losing money now. Because in that case, that might be an appropriate thing for an investor group to say, like, here's the wish list of what we want to do. And here's how the ROI will or return on investment will be in the long term. And an investor might want to buy into that and pay front the cash for excess inventory to, you know, expand into the market or a clean room to cut down the time of testing on a product, you know, something like that. Whereas for a bank, okay, no, we're raising debt for operations and potentially to do this clean room. Here's what the projection looks like for that. Mm-hmm. And you might slim it down a little bit not to be so aggressive in your spending. So it just depends on what you want to do and where you want to do it and who the audience of it is. So when we talk about these initial projections, you talk about them 20 hours to 30 hours. You build a projection, you share the projection. There might be some revisions, and that's the plan. And usually, you know, we're mid-year, we're in November now at this point. Typically, we'd start here and show historic January 1 through 2020 through October 31st. And here's the plan for November, December, and then the next 3 years or 5 years, whatever that looks like. And we build that out, we share it with the respective audience, and then it comes back to us at some point to say, where are we at according to the plan? And this might be quarterly at this point. Let's check in, see how the last quarter went or the end of the year went. For a lot of our clients, we do a lot of tax planning this time of year. So what we said at the projection and projection to actual, it's really important to see kind of where we laid out and what the most tax advantageous position for the companies might be. I'll tell you, for some of the ones that I'm fractional control or CFO on, we're meeting monthly on these and we're seeing how we compared to the plan. So part of their finance deck, apart from their normal financial statements, is going to be, here's what we said we were going to do. Here's what we actually did. Do we want to adjust the strategy moving forward? Do we want to pivot? And if we are going to pivot, that's now we had to redo the plan and share the new operational projection. So it just depends on the audience, depends on what we're trying to do with it. But my recommendation is at least quarterly, at a minimum, at least for tax planning season, at least for meeting to kind of see if there's a new plan going forward, at most probably monthly.
Okay, good to know. So, you know, do you have anything else in terms of forecasting? Cause if not, I'm going to switch gears to, you know, setting up your company to be prepared for investors. That was the other big topic we wanted to talk about. So real quick though, anything else on forecasting you want to throw in there?
The last comment I'll make on forecasting, I think this is hard for a lot of people that, you know, they look at it and say, this is a stake in the ground of what we're supposed to do. Projections and forecasts are not a stake in the ground. They're a starting point, but they are going to always be fluid and they need to have, you're going to be very twist and turned with some of these pivots that come up. You're not going to know what the future looks like. So be prepared to make changes in your strategy, in your plan, in your budget. the 20 hires we wanted to make this year probably might not happen. They had to move to next year. You know, things are very much in motion all the time. So I wouldn't get too hung up on, we didn't hit the plan, but it's more of, we didn't hit the plan. Now, what are we going to do to remedy the situation? Mm-hmm. I think that's an important concept to think through.
Okay, good. I like it. It's a good one to end on there. So setting up a company prepared for investors, let's, you know, kind of start with the basics there. Mm-hmm. You know, you had told me a few things, I know, and we talked about it last, but maybe, you know, start from the beginning. Yeah.
You know, I think it depends on what type of money you're going to get, what the investors are. Let's take a very high level approach. And let's say I just started, I now have a new hand sanitizer, right? Mm-hmm. And this new hand sanitizer, I built a prototype. I'm going to go raise money. Who am I going to go get the money from initially? You know, there's two avenues. If it's a great product and it's something completely innovative that's going to take over the market, you might want to go right to some high level strategic investors that know the industry of hand sanitizer. But if it's something where it's like, hey, I don't know if there's a market fit for this just yet, maybe you go raise some early grants, or you go and get friends and family type fundraising. You know, that's all, again, that's the stage of, we're betting on you as a founder to make this product work. At a certain stage, when you start getting recurring sales or you start seeing some traction, that's the level of sophistication where you go and you get some pretty high level investors to help broaden your network and help get this product out there a little more aggressively. So those are kind of the two buckets I'll classify these in. So let's talk about that very early stage, or the pre-seed fundraising stage. You're going to want to get your LLC set up or your C corp set up. The debate is, do I do LLC or do I do C corp? And if you don't know the difference, LLC is a limited liability corporation. C corporation is a typical corporation where in a corporation, you're going to get taxed at the entity level versus an individual investor or partner level. Whereas the LLC, the difference is, I'm getting taxed as a partner. So if I made $1 million and there's two partners, we each have $500,000 on our personal taxes to pay the tax now. So those are the two buckets you're really fitting in. And the debate is, what do people want to see? And I think, you know, in the past, it was always, we want you to be a Delaware C corp. For whatever reason, Delaware is a very nice state, business friendly state, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you talk about LLCs, I think there's, people aren't caring as much about that. I will tell you that when it's advantageous for an LLC is if you're not expecting to raise a lot of capital quickly, and you want to absorb those earlier losses to give to the partner group to put on the personal taxes, because there is an incentive there. You know, you could write off some tax liability by absorbing those losses from your investment. But if you're going to continue to raise capital and at some point switch to a C corp, it's probably just best to be the C corp, because at some point a VC or big strategic investor is going to say, I want you to be a C corp because of X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Or from a tax positioning standpoint, you might have less liability over here because you owe more in distributions and cash distributions to pay for tax bills over here on the LLC side. So it just all depends, but that's where you start. You pick one or the other, you get your lawyer involved, and you file your with the Secretary of State to get that in place.
Okay. And can you go, if you open up an LLC, can you go from an LLC to a C corp?
Yeah, you can file. There is an election form that you can file to transfer from an LLC to C corp. One other tax advantageous thing to do is be a cash basis company from a tax positioning standpoint, and then switch to an accrual basis and vice versa. There's ways to do that as well that could be put you in an advantageous tax position. All three of those topics you should probably cover with your tax accountant, because mm-hmm. It's always a case by case basis. But when you talk about an LLC, you can make the switch. There is a late election to make a switch too, but you have to have some rationale behind that as well. Okay. So if you're at the end of the year and you're like, oh, it's better for me to be a C corp, well, you have to have some rationale. There's some requirements with the IRS, but it's possible, right? Mm-hmm. So you can make the switch at some point. It's not that difficult. Your lawyer might grumble a little bit, why didn't we just do this at the beginning? But, you know, it just all depends on the circumstances as they're presented.
Sure. Okay. Very good. I probably got you off topic there. Where were you?
No worries. So, you know, what were we talking about? So starting the company in terms of being prepared investors. So couple different things. So once you kind of understand where your investors' dollars are coming from, that's where you kind of put the company of an LLC or a C corp. And again, your tax accountant, your attorney, they're going to have better advice for you when you talk to them about the specifics. But those are kind of the questions at the very beginning. Couple different things. You're going to need your federal identification number. You know, if you're hiring employees, that's where the level of complexity comes in, where, you know, you set up a payroll service. You probably want to get somebody like us or your accountants involved to set that up for you. get your QuickBooks set up. You know, there's a lot of different filings you have to do with the state, the unemployment groups, all that stuff to get all that set up. So there's a lot of little nuances along the way. They're not hard, but there's a lot, there's like a checklist of things you got to kind of check off once you hit these kind of thresholds of I've hired my first employee or I've raised a bunch of capital. There's a new class of shares. All of these things are considerations and you have to talk to your professionals to get you there. But that's kind of the very early stages of setting that up. And that's being prepared for investors and understanding that foundationally, we have a good bookkeeping system. We got a good payroll service. We have a level of experts that are tracking all this for us, a good attorney, a good accountant, a good marketing team, if that's the case. You know, all these things you want to have in place. And you probably want to put those on your pitch deck as well to say, here's who we're working with externally. So I'm not the expert in 100% of the company, but here's all the people I have that are advising me.
Right. Right. So let's talk a little bit about the benefits of, you know, using your company's services, right? So you yourself might not be an expert in all the areas, right? But you can, it's almost like, if you don't know the answer, you have a whole team supporting you in the background. Is that kind of the concept?
It is. And I always call it my startup squad.
Okay.
And the purpose of the startup squad is there are good attorneys in respective industries that are really good at IP law in this subset, right, of medical device space. And there's good attorneys over here that are really good in developing code or in code IP. And what does that look like, right? So it just depends on the industry and what the company is involved with. We could point you in the right direction of an attorney, of a good marketing agency if you need to do that. It just all depends. But yeah, the idea is, whoever your business advisor is or your trusted business advisor, ask them. They have a Rolodex of people that they've worked with in the past that might be a good fit for you. Another good resource is if you're in an incubator or in a community, that has like a Ohio Third Frontier resource type thing, they always have folks that sponsor those respective, incubators, and they might have a good list of resources. And there might be free resources. You don't know until you ask. So I would encourage you to kind of reach out in those communities and see who everyone's used before.
Right. So I think that handles a lot of the technical questions, you know, I had for you. Let me ask you this one. Why health tech? You know, for me, when they ask me, oh, Dwayne, why are you in the health tech field? No, I say health tech, you know, I mean, medical device, biotech, pharma, whatever it is, you're just in the development of new technology to benefit healthcare. I'm a chemist, right? I went to school for drug development. So it's pretty glaringly obvious why I'm in this field. You went to be a CPA. I mean, you can be an accountant for anybody, right? So what draws you to this industry?
You know, two things. I have a family of mothers, sisters, wife that are all in the medical field and best hearts in the world. So there's a level of care in that respective industry that I'd love to appreciate and get more involved with. So I think there's a level of philanthropic attitude towards it a little bit, where I want to be a part of the solution to help patients and help grow that. So that's part of it. But I think the other side of it too, and I think this is probably more so, is the culture of a startup, the culture of early stage entities and figuring out a problem, finding a solution to that problem, whether it's an engineered product or a new drug or whatever it is that is so unique to the world that it's going to make the world a better place. That is such a cool concept to be a part of. And again, the energy involved in these early stage companies is intoxicating. You get involved with these folks and they're sprinting down a hill trying to be that first to put this in the market, and I want to be a part of that. Whether or not I'm not involved as an owner, I have no tangible tie to this end result or this exit, but I was part of a solution. I can do that across a broad spectrum versus being part of one company at a time. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I like that. That's a good answer. I mean, that's the one thing I always tell people about, especially the med advice space, is the people in the industry are really good people. If they were in it for themselves or in it for the money, they would not be in med device. They would be in most likely pharma, but not in med device. So yeah, I think that's really cool. Man, I think I have everything I wanted to talk to you about. Did I miss anything that you are incredibly passionate about that you want to tell the listeners?
You know, I think if you're a founder, if you're a service provider, and you want to get into the space, you want to figure out the best way to move forward, call anybody that's in, call you, call me, call anybody in the communities over at Bounce or Jumpstart or Launch House or any of those groups in Ohio, Northeast Ohio, even in Columbus and Cincinnati, there are a ton of groups in those cities as well. There are passionate people that want to help. Mm-hmm. We're not sitting here and going to nickel and dime you for every minute of every hour. We just want to talk to you and see what you're up to. And hopefully we can provide some advice along the way. So I would just encourage you to reach out. I'm sure my contact information will be here. Feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email. We're always happy to be a soundboard, especially if, hey, I got this problem. What do you think about doing this or that? We're happy to give you that advice.
Yeah, as always, you know, I put any of my guests a URL to their LinkedIn page in the show notes. So depending on what application they're listening in, the up or down an inch, boom, click on Rich, and it'll take you right there. I'll also include your website and a link directly to there. Let's quickly, we have some time. Let's talk about, I haven't had anyone on just yet from Cleveland. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have had one person on from Cleveland. His name was Anthony Caparso. He's the chief technology officer at Inhale Medical, which is a technology that's spun out of the Cleveland Clinic. But let's talk about the Cleveland ecosystem real quick, because from a health technology perspective, there is a lot going on around here. But it's, like, I don't want people to become complacent. So this is something I'm really passionate about, is Cleveland really becoming like an epicenter for innovation. Not just, I think sometimes people assume we already are there because we have the clinic and we have UH. And like, I don't want to just be the place that says, oh yeah, we have a clinic in UH and they run a bunch of cool clinical trials. Well, that's great, but that technology might not be from Cleveland. So like, we need to separate that. You know, I don't like that, assumption, but on the other side is we do have a lot going on. You know, there's, like you said, you mentioned Bounce, GCIC, the Global Cardiovascular Innovation Center off the Cleveland Clinic there. You mentioned a handful of others. There's Plug and Play is in downtown as well. But I really would encourage the people in the industry in Cleveland to continue to push for more of that to come in. Because like if you're in the industry and you go to Minneapolis, or you go to Boston, or you go to San Francisco, San Diego, Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas, even in some parts of Florida, North Carolina, Research Triangle Park, we can be those areas. We're not there yet, but we have that trajectory where we could be there, you know? And I think we share the same passion with that, especially with Northeast Ohio. You know, I was born in Youngstown, which isn't really Northeast Ohio. I mean, we consider ourselves part of that, but that's because we don't want to be Pittsburgh or something like this. but there's just so much we can continue to do. We have so many resources here that it is something where like people are like, oh yeah, well, we're really good in health tech. And I'm like, yeah, we are. But we could be the best, we could be Minneapolis, we could be Boston, but we're not close. And I think sometimes people think like we are, like the general public. I would really love us to be there, you know? So that's like my rant.
I agree with you. I think we have a ton of resources, more so than some cities. And I'm waiting for this, Captain Planet type figure to come in and string all of our resources along and say, here's how you start. Here's where you start. Here's the resources based on what you're doing that you need. And then here's where you finish. And I think that roadmap for Cleveland is out there. It's just a question of putting the right people in the right chairs and discussing it and putting it on paper. And the vision of the startup squad, what does that look like? And how do we really take these silos of resource and put them in so that everyone's able to utilize them and we have a higher probability of success launching a company here than anywhere else. I think that's the end result that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm really on board with that. And that's something I'm incredibly passionate about. So if you ever need support in that area, I'd be more than willing to help. And also, fantastic reference to Captain Planet. I mean,
hey, I saw a lot of costumes this year at Halloween, and I was like, I wish I was that smart. I have a pretty pale skin, so I don't even need paint on my face for that Captain Planet costume. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great, Rich. Well, look, I appreciate your time. Hang on for a minute. We'll do a quick download after I stop the recording, but this is really helpful, really informative. Yeah. Enjoyed talking to you. Enjoyed learning about, forecasting and preparing for investments, but just really the importance of, having a good accountant on staff. I wanted to squash the idea that, I just need someone to manage the books. That's not what you need to get from this. You need to get more, right? So this was very helpful.
There's a level of strategic finance that it's a value add. You can get a bookkeeper anywhere, and there's a lot of cheaper bookkeepers out there that can do this because it is a commodity. But the level of strategic finance, it's that value added twist at the end. And I think that's really where the difference between success and more hurdles is created at this foundational level.
Yeah, it seems like money well spent and really, that's the important thing, that you got to add value to your company, and you're going to do it by spending your money to get the best possible or the most value from that, whatever, $10,000, $20,000, whatever it is, you got to get the best value. So you might as well go get someone who, can think strategically, but still get those systems in place for your company to run successfully.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly right.
Awesome. All right, Rich, I appreciate it. Like I said, hang on for 1 second and we'll do a quick download. Thanks for giving me an hour of your time.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you have any questions or comments for myself or Rich, there is a link to our LinkedIn pages in the show notes, or email the podcast and I will make sure to get you in touch with Rich. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And feel free to visit the webpage, projectmedtech.com, or send us an email at projectmedtechpodcast@gmail.com.